Good afternoon. You are tuned into Juno Afternoon on Friday, the 13th of October, the year 2017. And Clank will be here in a moment. Today on the show, we'll talk to Sherry McDonald about a new venture, Color Wheel Arts. We'll also get details about Saturday's Spaghetti Feed fundraiser for the Special Olympics. We'll learn about Sunday's boating safety course with Stuart Robart from the Coast Guard Auxiliary. And Wendy Burns and Charlie Weiss will be here to highlight this weekend's Opera Oktoberfest. That Writer's Almanac, Rare Note Music, and more on Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Some Northwest tribes are asking for a name change of Dead Indian Memorial Road. Brian Bull reports.
Recently in Medford, Oregon, commissioners held a public hearing on Dead Indian Memorial Road. Critics say the name is offensive and has been since the 1850s when the road was built. Settlers found two dead Native Americans on the site, and the name has stuck since. Perry Choktoot is the Klamath Tribe's Director for Culture and Heritage. He says back in the 1990s, when it was simply known as Dead Indian Road, tribal members talked to officials about renaming it Memorial Road.
And they said, oh, okay, no problem. And then it became Dead Indian Memorial Road. And I'm going to ask again from the Klamath Tribes to remove the words Dead Indian. If you look around the United States, you don't see too many roads saying Dead White Guy Road.
Choktoot hopes this time the county renames it Memorial Road. A roads and parks official says he gets regular complaints about the road's current name from locals as well as tourists. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
A South Dakota high school has forfeited homecoming events after racist and derogatory comments surfaced on social media following a homecoming tradition. Lee Strubinger has more.
Wednesday night, pictures started surfacing of Sturgis Brown High School students smashing a spray-painted car with sledgehammers. On the car was the statement, "Go back to the res." School officials condemned the apparent reference to Sturgis Brown's football homecoming opponent, Pine Ridge High School. Pete Wilson is the principal of Sturgis Brown. He says the derogatory remarks towards Native Americans are disheartening to both Sturgis Brown High School and the Meade County School District.
We are disappointed in the actions of our students. By no means do we support the actions or behaviors of what happened. And I want to express my apology to the Pine Ridge School community, families, as well as all schools in the state of South Dakota.
Wilson says some pictures were taken on a school lot, but that the event took place elsewhere. He says the district is taking steps to educate students about Native culture going forward.
We need to do a better job, not only in our school, but the whole state of South Dakota, to encourage more cultural awareness. And one of our goals moving forward is the cultural awareness from a K-12 standpoint.
Wilson says this was not a school-sponsored event. I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City, South Dakota.
In Lawrence, Kansas, not only did the city celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day this week, but also, as Rhonda Lavaldo reports, a tribal college was recognized.
Haskell has always been an open campus to anyone to visit, but many still feel the tribal college is off limits. With historic ties and cultural events, Professor Dr. Eric Anderson says the campus will hopefully get more visitors with this proclamation of Haskell Indian Nations University Week.
I think there is an impression that you can't come out to Haskell in the same way that maybe people are always up on KU's campus. Getting that word out there, as well as doing campus events, will give an opportunity for people to feel welcome.
Haskell sophomore William Wilkinson echoed the sentiments of building on a relationship with the citizens of Lawrence.
Haskell's not like an average university like KU. It has diversity, it has deep history, and with the city of Lawrence recognizing this week as Haskell Indian Nations Week, I feel like it tightens the gap between Lawrence citizens and the students at Haskell, and I feel like that this week is just one more step towards, I guess, a more connected and robust relationship.
As the Haskell community celebrates its 91st homecoming event, they hope the people of Lawrence feel they can take part in their festivities. This is Rhonda Lavaldo.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Northern Arizona University, a university committed to serving Native American students, offering opportunity in every direction, in Flagstaff, at community colleges around the state, and online. Learn more at nau.edu. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you want to tune into Juneau Afternoon. Our guest for the beginning of the show is Sharon McDonald. She's teaching a bookbinding class at Color Real Arts Studio, and that got me interested in, she's developed a new place to do art in Douglas.
Creating this community art space in Douglas called Caldwell Arts, where artists can come and teach classes and people can take classes. And it was kind of funny, I wasn't planning on, you know, starting a business, but I have an art space. I had one in Lemon Creek area, and I just haven't really been getting out there very much to go do art. So I was thinking I needed to bring my art space closer to home in Douglas, where I live. I've been living there for 20 years, and felt like it'd be great to just have something I can walk to. And I was just looking around downtown, looking for a place to rent, and I found this old, the Waterwheel Building, which is right next door to the Methodist Church and across the street from the Alaska Auto Center. And I saw it was for rent, and I went in and had a tour, and I realized immediately that's so much potential in that space, that it wasn't just a one-person space, but it was a community space. And so I've just been creating a community art space in the Waterwheel Building.
Describe it when a person first walks in.
So when you first walk in, the primary large part is an area where three artists are sharing that particular space to have their own personal studios. Tables. I'm one of the artists, and then I have Amy O'Neill Hawk as one, and Millie Ryan, and we all have our own little spots, and we're going to be doing our own art in that part of the building. And then there's going to be, right next to that is an art classroom that's has counter height tables, and I bought a bunch of stools on Juno Buy Sell and Trade, and just been like painting them fun colors and built tables. And so that classroom holds about 8, possibly 10 individuals, sometimes 5, depending upon how spread out the project that they're working on. And then in that space, I'm also, you know, it's great because I'm trying to connect with other people that are passionate about their own art so they can have opportunities to teach. So it's sort of like creating an art space where people take classes and also creating some art employment for teachers or artisans in town that are interested in teaching some art classes. I know like a couple weeks ago, a woman just showed up at Colorwell Arts. I never met her, and a lot of people know her in town, Laura Haywood, and she's like, I really love polymer clay. And she just talked about it, and she's like, I'm like, great, let's teach that, you know, teach whatever it is you love. And so that art classroom is just full of possibilities for, you know, teachers and students. And then the other end of the building is a bay window area. It's nice and homey and cozy space. The windows look out onto the street, and they look out onto that old gazebo bench thing that's sort of like, it's sort of overlooked, but I recently, with my family, we fixed it up, painted it bright yellow, put chalkboard on the outside of it and a corkboard for flyers and things, and kids come by and they write little notes or draw pictures, and sometimes I pose questions on the chalkboard, like, you know, what's your favorite, you know, dessert, or just something random. And it's been kind of fun having this little conversation with the community. So, but this cozy little room sees that yellow gazebo building or gazebo bench, and the cozy little room, I'm calling it the artist reading room or the room of inspiration. And I have transferred all of my own personal art books into that room, and got an old bookshelf from the observatory store that Dee used to own. So I have some nice books in there and then just some other shelves. And it's just really designed for people to come in and get inspired to do art. So you look at books. I have a, you know, majority of the books are about things that I'm interested in. But as we're teaching classes, we're trying to, you know, fill the books up with things that are similar to the classes we're teaching, like felting or painting or drawing or things of that sort. So it's a welcoming area for people just to come and check out books. It also is the location for my free Saturday morning still life drawing sessions, which has been really fun. Each week I've had different themes. This week is a nautical theme. The first few weeks were like floral and fauna, and we got some beautiful flowers from Frenchie's Floral Studio. And I mixed it with some bones and skulls, and it was really a neat yin-yang-y still life. And so we had a bunch of people drawing, and people just show up, and they're like, I haven't drawn in years, and but they're drawing, and they're having fun, and it's so great, so rewarding.
Tell me about the classes you have coming up.
Yep, so we have, well, in October, we have a number of classes. I'm teaching the bookbinding. I'm also teaching a blackout poetry class, a one-night blackout poetry class.
Now, tell me what a blackout...
Blackout poetry. Yeah, so you just basically take an old book page or an old book. You can do a whole book, but we're going to start off with one page. And you just sort of focus for certain words on the page that you're interested in, and then you kind of black out everything else, and you can create, it doesn't have to be like a poem per se in any, we're not going to do rules of poetry, but it's more like a statement that you want to highlight, and you can black out the rest of the words. But, you know, traditionally it's just a Sharpie, but we are going to have acrylic paints, gesso, and then on top of the gesso, you can do pen and ink. You can add words. So it's like a mixed media blackout poetry. That's what we're going to be doing. And tomorrow we have a drawing from life class. We'll have still life and model work. So drawing class is a three-session class. And Lucy Franklin is teaching that class, and she just graduated from college with an art degree, and so she's really new in town. Not many people know her, but she's great. We have a jewelry class by Roman Law. Amy O'Neill Hawk is teaching a mending class, creative mending, felted creature class. She's also going to be doing classes next month. Like, what is we doing? We're doing, oh, make your own knitting needles. A lot of fun, felty things. Beginning knitting and... what else is she doing? She's going to be doing a wet felting class in December. Or maybe, yeah, in December. And Rhonda Garnier, she's teaching ukulele lullabies in November. So we're not just doing your traditional fine arts. We're just, you know, doing whatever classes people are interested in teaching. And it's been really fun.
So people who've just joined us, I'm talking with Sherry McDonald. She's the proprietor of a new business in town called Color Real Arts. And she's also teaching bookbinding.
Yeah. And
tell me about your bookbinding class.
My bookbinding class has been great. I haven't taught bookbinding for a while, so it is kind of nice to be able to teach bookbinding again. We're doing a Coptic-style binding, which is when the sewing is exposed and you can see the stitches compared to sort of like your traditional book where the case covers all the sewing up. And we're doing a single-needle Coptic stitch binding, and the book we're doing is kind of a square shape right now. And with a single needle, you just kind of go in and out of the holes, up and down the spine. But when we finish sewing that one, we're going to finish sewing that one tomorrow. And then we're going to move right into the four-needle Coptic stitch binding, which is a little bit trickier, but it's going to be really fun. And it makes this really beautiful braid on the spine when you do the different, if you do two different colors in the thread. So that's been fun, and I'm hoping to teach more bookbinding in the months to come.
What are your hours?
Well, our hours are Saturdays, 9 to 4, and Wednesdays, 6 to 9. Very limited. But we also are going to be open on Tuesday nights when we have classes. So my set hours are Wednesday nights and Saturdays. And then we'll have a website up shortly, and it will show you when the classes are. But whenever we have classes, we'll be open those times too.
What are the prices?
Well, the prices of the classes are in a range. A lot of the classes are one-night classes, and when they're just one night, just for 2 or 3 hours, the price is right around $44, $45. If it's a 3 or 4 session, then the price goes up between $44 and $140 is where our range is right now.
And how can people contact you?
Well, they can call me on my cell phone number. Do you give your cell phone number on the radio? it's 209-7173. And it's also on Facebook. I'm on Facebook, Color Wheel Arts on Facebook. And then there's a website being worked on, which is colorwheelarts.com.
And bookbinding class is happening this weekend.
It is happening this weekend. It is a full class at this point, but the class will be offered again.
Sherry McDonald, thank you so much for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, thanks so much for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday the 13th of October, 2017. It's the birthday of the novelist Conrad Rector, born in Pine Grove, Pennsylvania, 1890. Moved off to New Mexico in 1928 with his wife, who was not in the best of health. And there he read stories of pioneer life in the Southwest, came out with his first novel, The Sea of Grass, in 1936. His trilogy of novels set in Ohio, entitled The Trees, The Fields, The Town, came out in the 40s. Conrad Rector was always anxious about money and was disappointed over and over again by the poor sales of his novels, The Trees especially. His friend and editor Alfred A. Knopf wrote, "I think that The Trees suffered from lack of action and story and gave the reader not enough narrative to bite into and something of the impression of being an overture rather than the main show." It's the birthday of the writer Arno Wendel Bontemps, born in Alexandria, Louisiana, 1902. First in his family to go to college, his father was furious that he chose to study literature instead of medicine or law. Moved to New York City, where he became friends with Langston Hughes, James Weldon Johnson, Jean Toomer, writers of the Harlem Renaissance. First novel, God Send Sunday, came out in 1931. His novel, Black Thunder, about an actual slave uprising, published in 1936. Then a third novel, which got terrible reviews, so he gave up writing fiction, got a job as a librarian at Fisk University, where he collected African-American literature in anthologies, preserving much that might have otherwise been lost. And it was on this day in 1881, Eliezer ben Yehuda held the first known conversation in modern Hebrew, a language that had not been spoken as a mother tongue since the second century. Ben Yehuda set out to revive the Hebrew language, raised his son to speak only Hebrew, compiled the first modern Hebrew dictionary, coined new words for doll, bicycle, ice cream, jelly, omelet. And it was in Paris on this day, 1881, Ben Yehuda and his friends sat down and agreed to speak only in Hebrew. Here's a poem for today by Marjorie Thompson, Summer of Lemons. It was the summer of lemons being replaced by oranges. Lemons, they said, had lost something that lemons sometimes lose. Painters piled navels and Valencias mixed red into yellow for still life with oranges. The wooden bowl, beautiful with lonely cracks, organic with time and handling. Evening, men and women squeezed wedges from the larger fruit. A squall over flounder. Mothers whisked sweeter juice into oil, sherry vinegar, crush of garlic. Seaside we sprayed oysters, then peppered as usual. In the absence of lemons, There was a thirsting to taste water kindled with novelty, set ablaze by unplumbed citrus. Slices like thin suns were cut to fit the rim line, to spin the circumference of goblets and jam jars. It was then, drinking what was more July than June, that we returned to each other. Summer of Lemons by Marjorie Thompson, from her collection Pretty Things Please, published by Turning Point Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices, subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Programming is supported by Alaska Graphics, showcasing businesses and organizations through on-screen advertising at Gross Alaska Movie Theaters, now including animation, video, and optional audio. Information on advertising on the big screen at akonscreen.com.
It's 21 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into June Afternoon. Our next guest in the studio are Lee Lewis and Aubrey Lewis. They're both involved in the Special Olympics, and they're having a spaghetti tea tomorrow at Thunder Mountain High School. Aubrey and Lee, thank you so much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Aubrey, you want to tell me about the Special Olympics first, please?
Well, we offer a lot of sports.
We offer a lot of sports.
What sports do you like to play?
Bowling and basketball.
Hope you don't get the balls confused.
No.
Where are the Special Olympics held?
The bowling season is at Taku Lanes. Then we have swimming at the Augusta Brown Pool. Basketball is held at Thunder Mountain Gym. And then we did have track and field, but I'm not sure if we have that anymore. I don't think we had a coach. So mainly it's just the bowling, the basketball, and the swimming.
And I suppose there's a lot of medals given out.
Exactly. Yes.
When is Special Olympics held?
Well, the bowling season starts in August. You practice for 8 weeks, three games each Sunday. So, and then we have what's called our local games, where the athletes bowl 9 games over a two-day period. And that determines who gets to go to the state games in Anchorage, and those will be held November 17th through the 19th. And the bowling this year is going to be at Eagle River Bowl. Usually we go on Elmendorf Air Force Base, but for some reason we couldn't go there this year, and so Eagle River very graciously, you know, invited us to come to their lanes.
Aubrey, I imagine you have fun at the Special Olympics.
Yes, I do.
What? Tell me more about the fun you have.
Meeting new people, bowling with my friends.
And you like basketball and bowling?
Yep.
Cool. Tell me, how many people come from Juneau to go to events up north?
Well, this year for bowling, I'm going to be taking 3 teams. I'm going to take a male team, a female team, and for the first time ever in Juneau, we have a unified team, and that's 2 non-intellectually challenged individuals partnered with 2 intellectually challenged athletes, and so that team will be competing in Anchorage also. And then the other 2 teams, the male and the female, are both the traditional athlete teams that I'm taking.
What's fun for you?
I love the sport of bowling. I've been the bowling coach since 2001, and it's just a wonderful time, you know, for everybody. Special Olympics never charges an athlete anything, And bowling, of course, is our most expensive sport, which is why we have the spaghetti feed every year. Tomorrow is our 13th annual. And what that does is it helps pay the bowling for the athletes because bowling is so very expensive.
It's 4:30 to 7 tomorrow?
Correct, at Thunder Mountain. And in addition to the spaghetti feed, it's all you can eat. We also have a wonderful dessert auction. And then if we have enough items, we also have a call-out auction.
What kind of items are going to be in the auction?
That I don't know. All I know is I'm making 6 desserts to donate. And but I think some of the local merchants have been asked to donate items. In the past, they've been very generous. And we usually raise a lot of money.
And again, the hours are from 4:30 to 7 o'clock at Thunder Mountain High School.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know more about how you psych yourself into bowling.
My grandma taught me everything since I was little.
What's the secret of bowling a high score?
Well, my uncle always told me to always hit the first pin.
The head pin.
The head pin, yeah.
And how do you do on that? What's the highest score you've ever made?
In December of 2015, I got a 205, my highest ever.
Well, you beat me already. I have been talking to Aubrey Lewis and Lee Lewis about the Special Olympics fundraiser. 380 feet going on tomorrow from 4:30 until 7 o'clock at Thunder Mountain High School. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Sometimes when a problem seems just too difficult for human ingenuity, it pays to look to nature for a solution. Here's an old story from Germany about the building of the world's tallest church 650 years ago. Construction like that's not without its challenges. One day, the workers were preparing to install an immensely long beam meant to span the entire length of the church. The only problem? They couldn't get it through the city gate. The solution they came up with was to dismantle the city wall to clear a path to the construction site. But just then, as the frustrated builders watched, a house sparrow carried a long piece of straw up to a crevice. The bird tried and tried to fit the straw into its nest and was foiled again and again. Finally, the sparrow turned the straw lengthwise and slipped it easily into the nest. The builders slapped their foreheads and did the same, turning the beam lengthwise. It's a joke, of course, but a good enough joke that the good-humored people of Ulm have adopted the house sparrow as the city's unofficial mascot. A reminder that even little minds can sometimes solve big problems. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note comes from Bloomsbury, a publisher of natural history books and birding guides. Critical Critters by Ralph Steadman and Carrie Levy is available now.
Voice, you gotta learn how to use it.
Hi, this is The Hype. I'm a volunteer DJ on Thursday's Tidelines. There's no other station with so many volunteers playing a mix of blues, rock, jazz, folk, and funk. If you've never signed up as a new member, how about doing it today? Your gift will be matched by Hecla Mining Company. This month, please join on as a new member at krnn.org. Thanks.
As you are tuned into a Juno afternoon. Our next guest is Stuart Robar is here to talk about the Sunday's boating safety class. Stuart, thank you very much for coming into the station today.
Thank you for having me back, Jeff, about promoting our boating safety class for this fall.
Why is boating safety important?
Boating safety it's not required in the state of Alaska, but it's once you've stepped aboard your craft or someone else's craft, there are a lot of things, reasons that you can have accidents, and there are some state and federal requirements that loom that you need to address in terms of safety equipment that you need to have on your craft.
And this course starts on Sunday.
Yes, it'll actually be two Sunday afternoons, and you need to come to both of them to complete the course.
What are the hours?
We're going to start at 1, and we'll terminate at 5, and then we'll give ourselves another half hour on the succeeding Sunday, which will be the 22nd of October, from 1 to 5:30 to wrap everything up.
Is there a cost involved?
There is $30 for a single student, $45 for a couple sharing a text.
What do you think the most important thing about learning boating safety skills is?
I would say situational awareness. And the whole emphasis on the class is to open eyes and to show them some of the common practicals. We can't customize the class to each individual boat per se, but there are a lot of things that are common, whether you're just a passenger on a boat, say you've been whale watching during the summer, you've been on someone else's boat, maybe you're thinking of a boat. This will help focus here for safety.
What are some of the obvious rules as far as safety goes?
Whether you have a stand-up paddleboard or a pleasure yacht, the rules of navigation and the safety of at sea applies to us all. and that may not be inherently obvious to some people that are paddle craft. They're just out paddling around on a stand-up paddleboard, or they're in a canoe or a kayak, that sort of thing. Yes, it applies to every craft.
Simple things like wearing a life preserver, I imagine, are important.
Yes, indeed. That's first and foremost in anywhere you're around water.
What about legal requirements?
Legal requirements, if you have them, your craft is mechanized, has an outboard motor of some sort, or it has inboard engines, the state of Alaska and the federal government require that you have AK numbers or documented.
Tell me about the Coast Guard Auxiliary here in town.
Coast Guard Auxiliary are volunteers. Sometimes the active duty will populate our ranks for a period of time, and we have some retired Coast Guard, but for the most part, we're all volunteers. We wear the same uniform. They call us the Silver Side because our insignia is silver, and the active duty has gold insignia.
But how many people are involved here in town?
About 15 to 17, real active. We're always looking for new members, people that have time and want to spend time and help us with our safety message.
Do you have to have a boat?
Pardon me?
Do you have to have a boat?
No, you don't. No, you don't. And there are quite a number of members in our flotilla that do not. They catch a ride with some of us that do have boats.
And the top of the list of things to remember is know your boat.
Absolutely. Know your boat. Know some of the nomenclature. Know its operating characteristics and its shortcomings. Anytime you design a boat, it has certain features, and it may not have other features on it that are on other craft. Some boats are more seaworthy than others. You just need to know your limitations and live within that envelope. Generally speaking, most boats are designed with the utmost of safety, and they'll take so much more than we care in terms of comfort and convenience.
What are some of the things that people forget, mistakes they make?
Not managing their fuel correctly, running out of fuel. We teach the rule of thirds, third out, third back, and a third in reserve, and it's embarrassing. Not keeping up on preventative maintenance is also a key issue. Not paying attention to some of the rules of the road, navigational safety of life at sea principles that we teach.
When I was in the Coast Guard, my chief's favorite occupation was going on Saturday and Sunday and board people, board boats. Why are they boarding boats?
They're boarding boats to as an enforcement function. On the Coast Guard Auxiliary side of the house, we're teachers and we're educators. We do volunteer vessel safety checks. We do not enforce the law. As a matter of fact, it's prohibited for us to even speak with the law enforcement officers, and conversely, they don't ask which boats we do. Every once in a while, they'll visit one of the boats that has a safety sticker on it. And sometimes it's just to say, okay, this is a boat. This is a typical example of people that are properly equipped. Thank you very much for your time. And then they'll go after folks that are non-compliant.
Stuart Robards, talking about the boating safety class, which is Sunday, or two Sundays in a row, 15th and the 22nd, pretty much all afternoon, 1 to 5 or 1 to 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
How do people find out more information about this?
They can call me at 789-7097, or my email is srobards@gci.net. I have small mini posters up around town, and you can stop by one of the Marine Hardware stores, or give me a call at my landline, 789-7097. Be glad to answer your questions. And you can take a look at our national website using the keywords Coast Guard Auxiliary. And you can go right in there and you can click on, I want to take a boating safety class, and you can see you can get an executive summary of all of our topics for all of our classes.
Could you repeat the phone numbers, please?
My landline is 789-7097. It's my personal phone number. And srobards@gci.net is my email. I'd be glad to answer your questions and welcome you in the class.
So this is for people who are interested in learning more about the boat and the various safety requirements and legal requirements. Anything else you want to talk about?
we need to get our drowning statistic down. Alaska still has, per capita, has a high drowning statistic, and the leading offender, if you will, are adult males. Gentlemen, we need to wear our life jackets and model the correct and safe behavior for our children.
Stuart, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
The KRNN Spotlight Concert Series presents a night of country music in tribute to longtime DJ Don Drew. Local musicians Andrew and Aaron Heist, Riley Woodford, Annie Bartholomew, Patricia Hull, and more will sing tunes from Don's real country playbook. The show starts at 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 1st at the Goldtown Theater. Tickets at KRNN.org, the station, and at the door.
Real country song.
And you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests in the studio are Wendy Burns and Charlie Weiss. They're here to highlight this weekend's Arts Opera Fest. Did I say that right?
Operatoberfest. Takes a little while to get your tongue around the title, that's for sure.
And it's put out by the Juneau Lyric Opera.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
First of all, tell me about the Juneau Lyric Opera.
Well, last year we celebrated our 40th year of providing opera to the public here in Juneau.
Not just opera, really, a variety of singing opportunities. We had a very ambitious 40th year where we attempted, with a moderate amount of success, to do a production of some sort every single month of the year.
Tell me about the event itself. Is it going over two nights?
The Operatoberfest will be a one-night-only event. It will be hosted at the Rockwell Ballroom tomorrow night, Saturday night, at 7:30 p.m. It should be a load of fun. Costumes are encouraged. Drinking is encouraged. There's always a lack of opportunities in a place like Juneau to put on some kind of elaborate or ridiculous outfit and go out and listen to music and have a night on the town. So we want to bring that to you with live music from a lot of our favorite local singers here in Juneau. It's a all-locals cast that we've put together, and we've been working really hard the last couple of weeks to bring this to you guys.
This is a low-key fun event. This is not a black tie affair. The public is encouraged to come join us in their costumes because we got a lot of songs to sing along with. There are going to be some lyrics out on the table. As you drink with us, we'll all be drinking too, so might as well come out and join the fun.
And the lubrication provided by the alcohol is helping us sing.
Well, it is centered around songs featuring alcohol, one way or another.
What roles have you played in the Juneau Lyric Opera productions?
I got roped into Man of La Mancha last year as an unnamed character. And halfway through the production, before we even put the play on, I was asked to be on the board. And I've really enjoyed contributing the last, almost 2 years now. So far I've only been in one. However, I am helping to produce our next large production, Into the Woods. And I will have a small part in that as well.
Wendy, how about you?
My very first performance with Juneau Lyric Opera, I think, was 2003, and I was the youth in Mendelssohn's Elijah at Midsummer Vocal Workshop. So it's been a long journey of concerts. I think the last fully staged production I did also was Man of La Mancha with Charlie. We came onto the board at about the same time. So this is our inaugural show as producers, and it's been a wild ride, but I think it's come together pretty well.
Tell me more about the individual events that make up the evening.
So the main structure of this is kind of like an operatic review with little smatterings of multi-genres of music. So if opera is not your cup of tea, I think there really is a little bit of something for everyone on our program. A lot of opera, but also a lot of more contemporary songs, as well as some sea shanties for our audience to sing along to. But really, anytime the urge strikes you, if you're sitting out in our audience, you are encouraged to join us. It's going to be kind of an all-inclusive event. We have a few specialty kegs donated by our very own Alaskan Brewing Company. And a drink from one of those is actually included in your ticket purchase. So we encourage people to stay, to sing along, to drink, and to overall just be engaged. It will be more fun, the more the merrier, and the more people in costume, the merrier. We will have some props for some photo opportunities as well. I'll leave that to be a little bit of a surprise. It's better if we don't tell you too much about that. But I think the setup we have in there is going to be really encouraging of laughing, of drinking, of dancing, of whatever strikes you in the moment. It'll be a pretty low-key event. We have a good ebb and flow to our program and a really fantastic variety of music coming from what I truly believe is some of our best local talent. So we'll sing and we'll dance and we'll be in costume and we'll see where the evening takes us.
What's the ticket price?
It is $20, and included in that is a token for one of our specialty brews from our Alaskan Brewing Company kegs.
What other things are coming up in the future for the Juno Lyric Opera?
Well, the next thing we have on our schedule is a board meeting that the public is invited to the evening of October 24th in the Valley Library. We can. I have been known to do so in the past, but I stop when people start throwing things at me. Outside of that, we have just finished our casting for our spring production of Into the Woods. That's going to be taking place the first and second weekends of February. We are going to be doing a midwinter festival. However, neither Wendy or I know much about that. That's one of our other board members that is taking the key lead on that.
That's with Lena Simmons, but if you want more information or you're interested in joining us and singing with JLO, please do go to JunoOpera.org and look into signing up for our Midwinter Festival, because it's a great way to get involved in everything we do here at Juno Lyric Opera, which, as an organization, we are not solely dedicated to the production of opera. We really like to approach a multifaceted approach to singing and really try to make this accessible and inclusive to our community.
If you get on our mailing list, you'll have all the inside news on our upcoming productions, as well as some of the history that we've had.
Such as?
Well, we occasionally revisit some of the productions we've done in the past. Some of our milestones we revisit. Like every year, we do our Divas, which we just had, last month?
Last month, and we raised almost twice our fundraising goal, which might make some new exciting things in addition to our future JLO horizon. So definitely some exciting things to look forward to. We've really, over the last 40 years, evolved a lot as an organization to doing large, fully staged productions of operas and musicals and expanding our repertoire into things beyond just classical literature. A really successful new contribution to sort of our annual JLO makeup has been our Afternoon of Ave Marias, which we hosted for the first time out at the Shrine in May of 2016. And that's now taking off and becoming an annual thing. So that's always our goal when we introduce something like this, especially something like Operatoberfest, is that we can begin to kind of cultivate a following and create a unique experience, especially an intimate experience that's going to be accessible to a new demographic of music lovers in our ever-growing arts community here in Juneau.
As for myself, I don't really have a background in classical music. I've sung karaoke, mostly pop stuff, but there's still room for me at the Lyric Opera, and any new people that want to come join us and participate, everybody's welcome. We're looking for anybody who wants to come join us, sing, and have a good time. We do cover all sorts of music, all genres, all years, and it's really a fun, exciting time to be with this group.
What's your favorite piece of operatic works that you like to sing mostly?
Of course you have to ask me that.
I'm not going to ask you to sing.
trust me, I won't now. I don't actually have a favorite operatic piece yet. I haven't listened to enough of it to have an opinion.
Wendy, how about you?
My favorite piece to sing, like the sing in the shower version of opera for me, is Una Voce Poco Fa from Rossini's Barber of Seville. I was singing another one of my favorite pieces, to invite you all to my dinner party at Oktoberfest tomorrow. And we actually, as a group, are going to be performing two of my favorite sort of choral operatic works. One of those will feature Mark Calvert and Kathleen Wayne as our soloists, and it's from a Verdi opera called La Traviata, and it's probably my favorite group choral number to do in the operatic world. So I'm really excited that we're able to kind of bring that to a stage in Juneau again.
And what time does your event start?
7:30 tomorrow. Doors will open before that. So I think we're opening doors at 7 was our
goal. I think we are opening at 7. Our call is 6, so we'll be ready by the time the doors open to start entertaining everybody that shows up.
And we will have beer, we'll have wine, we'll have cocktails. So whatever your evening desires are, we hope to be able to meet those.
And lots of singing.
And lots of singing.
Who's singing like that? I might have forgotten to ask.
I think you've covered our bases pretty well. I would just encourage everyone in our community to come out. Weather is not supposed to be amazing tomorrow, so being in a nice, warm hall with some wonderful, warm personalities and a nice cold beer sounds like a great place to be tomorrow evening.
Plus, it's a good excuse to break out your Halloween costume early and give it a test run.
Absolutely. We're kind of doing a combined approach of like equal parts Halloween and Oktoberfest being our initial inspiration. About a year ago, actually, we've been talking about this for a long time, I feel like, we started throwing around the idea of trying to create something fun and engaging, sort of a new twist on opera, from a lot of the traditional approaches that have been taken both here in Juneau and just all over in the operatic world. And we were trying to think of a way to combine some of our favorite activities, you know, beer and singing, and thus Oktoberfest was born, and we've since reached out to many of our local singers here. Another goal for me as a new producer and a singer from Juneau was to create an event that would really feature the talent that we have here in our little town. And so sort of over the last year, we've evolved this, and then gradually with the different kind of spikes of creativity brought in elements like, why don't we include costumes? You know, why don't we include this or that? And I think we've put together something that has definitely not been done before here, and I think will be a really, really fun event.
I think it's going to turn into a multiple-year thing where we have the next annual and so on. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully we'll be able to continue doing this.
One last question. Who came up with the pun?
That I will take credit for that.
Wendy's the driving force
here. It kind of came to me on a whim. I think we were actually sitting at a board meeting. I want to say it was at a board meeting, or maybe our board retreat.
I think so.
And we'd been there for a long time, and I was making puns, things like, oh, a great opportunity. And we'd been toying around doing an event like this that involved drinking and beer, but we didn't have a title for it, sort of modeled off of a opera on tap kind of focus. And being my punny self, Oktoberfest kind of popped into my brain, and it was really hard to say at first, but then it kind of clicked, and thus this creation was born.
And where is it happening tomorrow night?
Rockwell Ballroom.
And again, where can people get tickets?
You can get tickets at the door.
That's great. Anything like that I might have forgotten to ask?
I think we also are selling some tickets through Vendini through our website. Outside of that, I think our event and venue is covered. We are looking forward to seeing everybody out there that wants to come out and have a good time. I can guarantee you, everybody's going to be laughing and drinking that's there, smiling, singing.
I think it'll be a blast. So we are going to be having a blast. We'll both be singing, and we would love it if you would come out and have a blast with us.
Absolutely.
Shirley Bice and Wendy Burns, thank you so much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you very much, Jen.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Mr. Brown, I see you to the station box. Coming up on Monday on a June afternoon, Shelley Delaney will be your host. We'll talk about the glory hole and Thanksgiving. Alan Kiyami will be here to highlight the Alaska Day Pancake Breakfast fundraiser for the Juneau Senior Center. We'll talk to Stephanie Valdez about coast training. Steve Kosas will be here with a preview of Wednesday's planetarium presentation, 100 Years of Juneau Relativity. That Writer's Almanac, Bernard Newsymore, next Monday on a June afternoon. Well, the forecast for today, rain, mostly in the 40s. Forecast for Saturday, rain likely. Sunday, widespread rain showers with high temperatures in the mid-40s. Thanks for tuning in to a June afternoon today. Have a good weekend.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on